Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
This is not driven by policy or humanity or fixing a broken system. It's driven by election decisions. And everything that happens at the border is related to his campaign, and it's not going to be good.
Congress needs to change the laws. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon because my Democratic colleagues wouldn't even vote for a compromise bill last year.
I can definitely say in my district, they do not want three more weeks of looking at signs on their roads. They do not want three more weeks of robocalls. They do not want three more weeks of beautiful, lovely flyers coming in their mailbox.
It really is the thing that we've been looking for. And a lot of states are going to it, and a lot of states are going to a statewide legally framework. This is a good move. It really goes to the cause of the problem.
This is Big Tobacco, which now owns Big Vape, trying to define in statute their product so that they can pave the path for future generations to become addicted to nicotine.
And here with us to talk about the latest legislative news, including moving Arizona's primary election date and more, are Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting and attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So, Emily, what do you make of moving Arizona's primary election date an extra 3 weeks? Yes, there will be more robocalls, more signs, more stuff like that. From a practical level, does this help those running for office, not helping voters so much?
Right. That's exactly right. This is about the people, the candidates that are running for office. Moving everything back 3 weeks gives them more time to come through a contentious primary and regroup and lick their wounds and kind of re-message for a general, which is often a very different campaign than that of the primary. But you nailed it. For those of us that have to live in these places, we've got three more weeks of signs, which, you know, I'm looking to Roy to sort of talk to candidates and help coach them out of that, because I know it doesn't move me at all.
They don't listen to me.
So, Roy, an extra 3 weeks, is that going to make a big difference?
I mean, it will. I mean, to Emily's point, you know, we have had a late primary in comparison to a lot of other states. And so if you're in a contentious primary, you are potentially left with a problem where if you had to go, you know, to your far right or your far left to win that primary, you find yourself with only a matter of weeks before the general election. So it's hard to pivot back. And so I think certainly candidates are going to like having some additional time to maybe recalibrate their image and their message for a general election, which is totally different than the primary election.
In addition to the extra robocalls and mailers and signs and all that stuff, you know, here in the beginning of August, there are a lot of people who aren't actually here. What does that do in terms of turnout, in terms of how people are actually going to vote, given that they're now doing it 3 weeks earlier?
Well, I mean, if you do the primary in even more of the heart of the summer, certainly there's less people here. I mean, everyone's in San Diego or somewhere else trying to escape the heat. So I imagine that turnout is going to be pretty low. Although, you know, these days, so much of our voting is done by mail that, you know, maybe it's not going to be that much of an effect. But I kind of laugh because it reminds me of what some East Coast cities do in scheduling, you know, elections in the middle of winter, like in Chicago or New York. And that's, you know, machine politics kind of 101, because you know that no one is going to vote when the weather is bad. So we might see some turnout drop off.
Do you think so? Oh, I do. I agree. There may be some. And in fact, although the bill passed with bipartisan support, there were some on the far left, or maybe I shouldn't say far left, just some members of that caucus that were concerned it would disenfranchise college students to have it the first week in August. Now, most of us don't think college students, you could take the polls to their dorm rooms and they still wouldn't vote. But there were those arguments that were made, to Roy's point.
There were some who even brought up the idea of maybe doing it in May, which seems incredibly long for a general election campaign. Would that have made any sense?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, same kind of idea. If we're talking about three extra weeks of you know, robocalls and stuff, then you're going to be adding a couple of extra months.
But wouldn't campaigning change then, Roy? Wouldn't it become more pure? I'm sorry, what did I just say? That's ridiculous.
No, if you moved it to May, I mean, candidates could essentially run as two different people. They could run as an extreme partisan person up until May, and then they could shift gears and become very moderate and reflective of the entire state. You know, it gives them more time to pitch different personas without the voters looking at them like they've lost their mind and calling it into question.
Well, is 3 weeks really enough time? I mean, I know that time in politics is different than time sort of in the real world, but is that enough time for somebody who's in a contested primary who had to go to the right or the left of where they normally would be to then move back to the center? Does it appreciably make a difference based on what we've had in the past?
I think it's a marginal, incremental difference in terms of the people running campaigns. I think it's going to feel like an eternity to those of us being targeted by the campaigns.
Yeah, I mean, and we're sort of talking in theoretical terms. I mean, the practical reality is sometimes if you get an additional 3 weeks, an additional 3 months, it doesn't make any difference. And, you know, we might be talking about the McSally Sinema race last year, but I think if, you know, in my view, if you added another 3 weeks to you know, the race that makes, so McSally would have additional time after the primary, I really don't think it would have made a difference.
Well, and Roy showing as a future in radio, what do you make of that as far as that goes, Emily, going to the topic I wanted to go to next? That's perfect, Roy. So what do you make of what Martha McSally's saying, Emily, the idea that if she had a little bit more time, it seems that the way her campaign was being run, Roy makes a good point. Maybe it just would have been 3 more weeks of very odd ads that Kyrsten Sinema might blow up the world kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, possibly. It's always a little bit of a reach from my perspective when candidates want to go back and say if all these circumstances were different, we would have had a different outcome. And we could play that game all day long with a number of different things. You know, I could see where if she thought she had more time to get her messaging out, perhaps, you know, in Martha McSally's defense, she is the one that had the highly contentious primary. You know, she and Kelly Ward were going at it. And so, you know, coming right off having to outright Kelly Ward to win and then shifting gears to run against Sinema, who really just waltzed right into it and was there waiting for her and able to run just a positive, positive campaign through the whole thing and be right on message, I think the 3 weeks probably would have benefited McSally.
Where that leads me to, though, the phrase that Emily used before about two different people running as two different people. Martha McSally, it almost didn't seem like she tried to do that, frankly.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, again, we're talking about, you know, you could take advantage of this additional time because you could change your, you know, your messaging. But I didn't see, even with the limited amount of time that we had last year, any real change in Martha McSally's messaging from the primary into, you know, the general election. I mean, she still was concentrating on, you know, hard right sort of immigration views and national security and things like that, which she was talking about in the primary. And I don't think that really, you know, particularly worked. And if anything, I mean, you know, she's arguing that potentially she'd have done better if there was more time. But if you look at the polling, if anything, the polling was getting worse for her at the end. And so I'm not sure adding any additional time would have been helpful.
Perhaps with more time, she would have elected to pivot. You know, that might have been a strategic calculation. She had had to go so far to the right.
And we know she was in a tough spot. Maybe she put herself there because of President Trump, so.
Very much so, very much so.
Understanding how early it is leading up to next year's election, are there any races at this point that either of you think might be particularly affected by the fact that the general election is a little bit longer, primary races that are shaping up to be maybe particularly partisan or difficult for one candidate, for whoever makes it out, to then have to pivot?
Well, we have less races next year, right? I mean, the one big one is the U.S. Senate race again with Senator McSally and Mark Kelly. But again, that's a scenario where both the incumbent and, you know, the Democratic candidate is not essentially going to have a primary, so it's not going to really be affected by that. I'm sure more at the local level or the state legislative level there may be that issue going forward, but I'm not sure it will have any effect necessarily next year. But certainly when we get more races, statewide races in 2022, there might be an effect.
Emily, how does that affect spending potentially? We already talked about how millions are spent. Does an extra 3 weeks give consultants a chance to just roll out more dough?
Yeah, lucky us. yeah, you know, an extra 3 weeks is an extra 3 weeks of spends, an extra 3 weeks of asks. It's taking the cost of running a campaign up by a certain percentage. And, you know, I don't know that that's beneficial for everyone. You know, we'll go back to the signs because I can't get over it. They're not free, you know, so someone's going to have to pay for those and continue to replace them through monsoon season. And you know, it does. It ratchets it all up a level.
With all of those signs and the spending and everything, is it different spending or more spending in a general election situation than a primary? Because we're not really adding more time to the campaign in general, we're just sort of distributing it differently, right?
Well, I mean, they may start campaigning earlier. You know, they actually might start with the primary. You know, I'm sure they're going to want to get a jump on it. They're not going to wait. So, you know, I think it will be overall spending. You'll see an increase.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, people are just going to start sooner. And, you know, when you change the date of the primary, that changes the dates of other things that happened before the primary, right? And so, for example, candidates now are going to have to file their paperwork 3 weeks earlier, right? And challenges, to the extent that there are election law challenges to candidates, that's also going to occur 3 weeks earlier. So for an election lawyer like me, I like that a little bit because it extends the amount of time that we have to litigate these things and whatnot. But from the candidate perspective, again, I mean, you're going to be starting your campaign sooner. And that's certainly going to increase spending, I think.
Let's move on to talk a little more about a race that we've already discussed, which is the potential of Martha McSally against Mark Kelly. New poll came out this week showing it in a dead heat. Talked to some people who were surprised because McSally is technically the incumbent, but people don't really know Mark Kelly as much yet. Roy, I know you have some involvement with the Mark Kelly campaign, but let's talk about where you see this. Are you pleased that it's showing a dead heat? Are you surprised that it is, that maybe Mark Kelly would have gotten people excited in the same way that Joe Biden is getting some Democratic voters excited? How do you see this?
Well, I'm not totally surprised. I mean, I think Mark Kelly is a tremendous candidate. I mean, certainly the national Democrats and even local Democrats have been recruiting him to run for a very long time. And I think, you know, we've seen from the outpouring of financial support that he's received early on in the campaign, that there's a lot of enthusiasm for him. And I think, again, you know, as we've talked about on this show before, I mean, his biography, his message, I think is really, really strong. So seeing it tied right now, it doesn't surprise me at all. And then kind of going to the point we made earlier about Martha McSally, I mean, even as a U.S. senator, I really haven't seen sort of the old Martha McSally, you know, and by that I'm talking about when she was in Congress as sort of a more moderate Republican down in Tucson. We haven't really seen her be that person. And looking at next year when you have, you know, Trump on the ballot at the same time, I think it's going to be very difficult for her to, you know, differentiate herself from Trump. And maybe she doesn't choose to do that. Maybe she sort of aligns herself with Trump, but then I think that's probably bad for her chances.
Emily, dead heat makes sense to you now or no?
You know, it does. I mean, it is a credit to Mark Kelly that it would be reflected as a dead heat right now. You know, she's an incumbent. She just came out of a campaign. She should have a lot more name ID, a lot more popularity. However, I always want to caution people to be careful with polls. You know, this is the same polling outfit that had McSally up by a lot 2 weeks before and then had to redo the poll. And you know, that's not a knock on them. That happens. Polls involve numbers, but they aren't scientific. You know, you can have a poll designed to use as a propaganda piece to push your agenda. You can also commission a poll that tries to actually get a gauge on things so that you can make strategic decisions in a campaign. Polls can be what you want them to be. So I just think it's important to, you know, not to put so much stock in them.
It also seemed like there was a pretty high percentage of undecided voters in this poll. And, you know, maybe this far out, that's not terribly surprising. Although, Emily, as you said, Martha McSally just came out of a campaign. Most voters, I would imagine, know who she is. Mark Kelly has been around for a while, if not in politics and in other areas. Was it surprising to you the number of people who said they didn't know what they wanted to do?
Not really. I think it is a little early. I think we don't have much of a track record in the U.S. Senate for Martha McSally. Mark Kelly, we have no track record. You know, I can kind of see where people are thinking, I don't know right now. And I'm sick of what I just went through, the election that never seemed to end. You know, that went on a long time. Yeah.
How do candidates use polls, especially polls this early in the cycle?
Well, I mean, I think from the campaign perspective, the top line number is a little less important than the crosstabs, right? When they're asking questions more specifically about what kind of messaging is working and what people's overall views are of particular candidates. And so to the extent that there's polling being done right now, I think that's what the campaigns are more worried about. You know, the top line numbers would show a tie. You know, I think everyone is looking at next year as this is going to be a close race. I mean, Arizona is a purple state in a lot of ways now. And I think that you're going to see going forward all of these races, these statewide races are going to be pretty tight for the most part, especially at the federal level. And so, you know, I don't think it's a surprise. I think all of us have a sense that, like, this is going to be tight. It is probably tied right now regardless. But to your question, I mean, I think people are really more, the campaigns are really more concerned about, like, well, what messaging is working right now with people that we're polling. Mm-hmm.
That's Roy Herrera. Also here is Emily Ryan with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. It's the Friday Newscap here on 91.5 KJZZ in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our panelists today are Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting and attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Roy, one follow-up to continue on the Kelly McSally track. One thing that was different is that Kelly's name recognition was actually, according to this poll, kind of low considering what a national figure he's been. Do you think as more people recognize his name, they're going to like him more?
Certainly. I mean, and that doesn't necessarily surprise me. I mean, you know, Ken McSally in cinema just went through a long race where there was a lot of ads, a lot of, you know, publicity related to the race. And so them having pretty universal name ID is not, you know, surprising to me versus someone who hasn't run here before. But I think, yes, as people get to know his record, his biography, the things he's accomplished as a veteran and, you know, his work on issues like gun control, I think they're going to like it. And then I think you've seen in the messaging so far, messaging that's similar to what cinema ran on, you know, messaging related to the cost of healthcare and sort of improving jobs and the economy and things like that. And so I think if that messaging worked last year, and I think it's going to work again because I think that's where Arizona voters are at.
Emily, I'm going to tee this up for you a little bit. So there have been some complaints about Senator Sinema to this point. She's going to be with Attorney General Barr next week. Has she been tough enough on the Trump administration? So is there any chance that some Democratic voters, as we get into the Senate race, might say, you know, I like Kyrsten Sinema. I like Mark Kelly, but is he going to run as sort of an independent and then sort of vote the same way Kyrsten Sinema is? Do you think there's any concern from Democrats about that?
I really don't. I think that your voter has no place to go. You know, so they're going to see Democrats have been really smart in their campaigns for these offices. They've run to reflect the voters. And I think they're being cautious. You know, certainly Senator Sinema is doing a good job right now of not pushing her own personal agenda as much as she's trying to reflect the people she represents. It's really what voters want out of someone. There probably are going to be Democratic voters who are frustrated that this is our shot. You know, be more liberal, do it, get in there and do it. But they also want to hold that seat, and they've got no place to go. She's not going to be primaried. So, you know, if it's that or a hardcore Republican or just a Republican, mm-hmm. you know, she's not going to lose Democratic voters to a Republican.
Do either of you think that Senator McSally or Mark Kelly are in any danger of having a serious primary at this point?
No.
No, I really don't. I really don't. And that's another thing that Democrats are doing really well that Republicans need to pay attention to. They are, you know, I always hate it when you say, like, the old guard tells you when it's your turn. You know, there's no turn.
Clearing the field.
Right.
Kind of thing.
You run when you're ready to run, when you're moved to run. But they are doing a great job of taking turns. We just saw Grant Wood step aside and make room for Mark Kelly. They're being strategic rather than tearing each other apart. Now, in the presidential race, that's not going to be so much. But certainly here in Arizona, they're being very strategic and smart.
Well, and I think the presidential race, I mean, even the Democratic primary is somewhat of a reflection of what we're talking about here. And that is to say that there are, you know, Democratic activists on Twitter, let's say, that are, you know, maybe upset with certain things that Senator Sinema is doing. Maybe they'll be upset about certain things that Mark Kelly says or does. But at the end of the day, that doesn't necessarily reflect the sort of average Democratic voter. And I mentioned the presidential campaign because you have Joe Biden, who, you know, there are some people that are upset and there's sort of a more activist liberal wing of the Democratic Party. They say that the party's moved on. But if you look at all the polling, I mean, he's, you know, certainly the front runner at this point. And I think that's just a reflection, again, that the sort of average Democratic voters may be concerned about different things than the person on Twitter who's upset.
Now, someone whose name was floated for running for president as a Democrat but apparently isn't going to do it is Tom Steyer. So, Roy, where are we at in terms of Tom Steyer coming into Arizona? Stacey Champion, local activist here who was going after APS, she's even saying she really doesn't want Tom Steyer's money to get involved in this. How is Tom Steyer seen? I don't want to say you're speaking for all Arizona Democrats, but on the progressive wing of the party, is Tom Steyer seen as some great guy because he wants to impeach President Trump, or is he seen as a little bit of something different?
You know, I think you have mixed feelings about him on the Democratic side. I mean, on the one hand, you know, he came in last year and on a ballot measure that, you know, by all sort of accounts was pretty disastrous, right? I mean, it didn't, you know, it certainly got defeated at the ballot box and it wasn't a particularly good campaign. You can argue that maybe it was just sort of strategic errors, but the actually core message maybe wasn't wrong. But certainly I think there's that. You know, the track record's not particularly good. Then, of course, there's these, and this is the criticism the Republicans make of him all the time, but I think it's true even for some Democrats that, you know, he's an out-of-state person. He's from California, isn't necessarily, you know, from here and knows knows Arizona very well. So who is this person who's just like flying in to suddenly be interested? And I think that's maybe some of Stacey Champion's point, where, you know, she's been fighting this sort of David and Goliath battle for a while now. And then suddenly Tom Steyer wants to come in with all this money and participate when that seems a little bit, you know, last minute. And so I think the message on him or the feelings on him is pretty mixed, even on the Democratic side. Mm.
I agree with Roy. You know, we're seeing Tom Steyer certainly stay engaged in Arizona after this last election with the $50 million spent going after Brnovich. Now he's throwing money at trying to overturn the recent Corporation Commission rate increase. A lot of people believe that he's taking a page out of the APS playbook and wants to buy himself a couple corporation commissioners in Arizona. I have to say, Republicans are starting to fall in love with Tom Steyer because he's a really fun villain for us. He is the Democratic Party's Koch brother, and we like talking about him.
Emily, do you think at the end of the day that his involvement will have any bearing whatsoever on that APS rate case?
You know, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I think the more sunlight that's on it, the less impact he'll have. You know, certainly if he's looking long term to get some people elected, you know, those ads write themselves that, you know, an out-of-state California billionaire is trying to buy himself a couple elected officials to regulate his business. You know, that's...
So, Roy, if you're a Democratic candidate for Corporation Commission, then do you have to be really careful about whether or not so much that you accept his money, because you can obviously choose not to, but if he's forming a super PAC or doing something like that to contribute to your race, is it kind of like the opposite of, like the vice versa of when APS was spending a lot of money on their candidates? Do you have, as a Democrat, do you have to be careful about running for office with Tom Steyer's money?
Yeah, I think you do a little bit. I mean, if anything, my advice for that particular candidate would probably be to say essentially, like, I'm running myself, right? And I have my own views on why I would be a good commissioner, and I'm not, you know, listening to necessarily what Tom Steyer says. Maybe we agree on certain things, maybe we disagree on certain things, but I'm an independent and I'm running, you know, because I have a view on how to improve the system.
Well, Roy, has the perception of Steyer changed dramatically, let's say, since Prop 127? I mean, was there a vibe that maybe before that, oh, it's nice, this guy is an activist, he's got a lot of money, but then because, as you mentioned, that measure failed so badly, now it's even more like, yeah, maybe we don't want you around.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the view has changed a little bit, probably for the negative for him. Now, in fairness to him, I think on the issue, the perception of the issue of climate change and energy policy and things like that has probably moved in his direction. In other words, I think since the election, you know, we've had a lot of conversations with the Green New Deal and, you know, other things. Certainly on the Democratic side, as a priority, climate change and clean energy and things like that is shot to the top of what I think Democrats are concerned with. And so, you know, this would be one of those things where the issue that he's focused on is better, you know, for him, but maybe personally his view is not as good.
Emily, in any way could this help the perception of APS? APS is trying to sort of change its image right now. The fact that Steyer is out there, does that help APS in some ways? At least we're in-state.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're the hometown team. You know, they're the people we all have a relationship with. That we're all getting, you know, a lot of us are getting our power and electricity from. As they start to change their spending habits and how they handle things, yes, the voter's memory is short, and this definitely benefits them, especially to have him dumping money in from California and failing at it. It's a great story for them.
I think it does. I mean, it does help APS in the sense that there's this villain that they can point to. With that said, I mean, I do think that as we've seen now, as it, you know, with all these disclosures of the spending that APS has had over the last several election cycles, you know, with candidates that they prefer, mostly Republican and all Republican, I do think they do have a problem that's separate, a public relations problem that is separate from Tom Steyer that I think they need to address, you know, and I think it'd be difficult for them, but they certainly need to address it.
Well, you mentioned that voters' memories are short. Does APS's disclosure of its spending matter for the next CorpCom election?
Oh, you know, I don't think it's going to make a lot of difference. I think right now our sort of inner circles are churning on that and talking about it. But, you know, not to disparage the voter, but they're busy living their lives. Most of them don't understand what the Corporation Commission does, let alone know who's on it, let alone understand how APS is connected to all that. Now, that could change if someone like Steyer or a local group had a lot of money to really spell it out in a simple way. You pay rates are increased, that money's being spent, to inform and influence you with your own, you know, if someone boiled that down and really blanketed the population with that and drove it home, that could have an impact.
That'll have to be the last word. That's Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting, Roy Herrera, former congressional staffer, current attorney. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.